Number eight says introduce the speaker or the person who is to introduce the speaker. My name's Mary Jean. I'm an alcoholic. And our speaker this evening is a really good friend of mine, Yolanda. I've known Yolanda, I think we decided 24, 25 years, maybe. We've kind of grown up together in the program. Years ago, many years ago, I was working night shift in an ICU and started going to an 11 o'clock meeting at Tillman on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and that's where I first met Yolanda, and that was a turning point in my sobriety, but that was also the beginning of a friendship that has lasted that long. Yolanda's going to tell you her story. I'm going to tell you my experience, that she practices an integrity in everything that she does. She practices loyalty. She works the program. She has a sponsor. She goes to meetings. And I've watched her go through some stuff since we've been here. So I'm excited to hear her story. And with that, I give you Yolanda.
Hello. My name's Yolanda, but my nickname is Yoli. So everybody calls me Yoli now. So I am an alcoholic and I am an addict. I used to think I was just an alcoholic, but the longer I stayed here, I realized that I did abuse cocaine. I'm gonna start from the beginning. So I grew up in Texas in the Rio Grande Valley, and my grandparents were from Mexico, and we used to go visit them, and I used to think that we were rich. Because they had an aluminum house, and they had no floor, and they used to do their laundry in the river. So my dad, he was a custodian, so we had a house. You know, we had an outhouse, but compared to what my grandparents had, right? So as my life progressed, my brother Ernie, and I'll mention him several times, He was the first person to introduce me to marijuana. And can y'all hear me? Okay. And I think I was 12 when I first smoked a joint. And I remember everything was just really funny. And I got spanked for being so stupid silly when my parents got home from the grocery store. And I don't remember it. That's how strong the weed was, you know? And so from then on, my life continued where I'd smoke a little bit here. Never really drank, it just mainly smoked, you know? And I used to love to come home and watch TV. And I used to tell everybody that would hear me that I was gonna be like the people on TV. Because I thought they had so much, you know? And I was like, I'm gonna be just like them. And they used to call me crazy. That's my nickname in my family. Because I was very imaginative, you know? And long story short, I ended up, my aunt gave me my first break to get out of, my grandfather was a farmer. I picked cotton by the time I was 9 years old. I mean, that was my summer, you know? We didn't know any different. We thought it was fun, you know? And you know, we didn't have inside water, like we had to do it from a pump. And, you know, my life was so different back then to what I've created today, but it made me part of who I am today. And by the time I was like 18, 17, 16, my brother began to drink really bad. He graduated from high school. And unfortunately, because we did have a parent that was very abusive to us, so he had a lot of rage. And in that rage, he would tend to pull out guns. And I'm from a child of six, so I'm in the middle. And when he would come, you would know, because we had gravel road to come in to where we lived, and I could hear him, the brakes, everything. And so I would start hiding people. My mom would be screaming, and my brother would want to hit my mom, and it was just like chaos. So that kind of gives you an idea, like my background, how I grew up. So my aunt was living in Houston, and so I asked her if she would let me stay with her, and I was 19 at the time. And I was in the hair world. In high school, I went to cosmetology school, and so I became a hairstylist. And she gave me my first break in Houston. And I went to go live with her, and I was introduced to cocaine. And I loved it. It was like, oh, I can drink more, right? So I began to, you know, drink and do cocaine. But at the same time, I never wanted to go back. So where Houston was compared to where my parents, it was like 9 hours away. And it was poor. The Rio Grande Valley, if any of y'all know, when you look at the state of Texas, we're way at the bottom. So if you know that area, it's poverty driven, right? So to me, Houston was bright lights and like perfect for this alcoholic, you know? And so I started working at this salon, and this girl named Darlene, I'll never forget it. We went out one night and we were drinking, and we went to the bathroom, and she said, here, you know, try this. And it was great. And so my life continued, but no matter what, even though I drank and did that, I always went to work. Like, I always made myself get up. One thing about me is that I've always been over-responsible. In my sobriety today, I'm trying to learn that it's not my problem. Because I've always made everything my problem. And looking back at that, it's part of the way I grew up. I'm used to rescuing and saving and taking care of people. So then, you know, I'm in Texas, blah, blah, blah. So then I ended up coming to a hair show here in Georgia in 1987. I came to a hair show, and it was called the Smart Show. And when I talk about hair shows and stuff like that, there's different categories of the hair world. There's supercuts, and then there's, you know, more upscale, right? So this guy was in a very upscale salon, and we came, and the guy I was working for in Texas, he was really good friends with this guy here in Georgia, and I end up coming here to Georgia to watch him perform, blah, 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 and they end up using me to help him. And from the airport to where we're going, I knew there was money here to be made. So I told him, will you hire me? And so he hired me, and I moved here, and I only had a suitcase. I didn't own a car, I didn't know anything. Him and his wife let me stay with them. And so I was introduced to a world that was very different. Like, I got to meet President Bush, like many like people that used to come to this man because he was just like an amazing hairstylist. So due to that, like I got involved, like lots of drugs. And I remember one time, I wrecked, I got DUIs, you name it. All that happened to me. And one night, I went to a bar, and I loved to be by myself. I never wanted to be burdened by anybody. I always drove my car, I valeted car. I just didn't want to be bothered and held back by anybody. Unfortunately, sometimes I found myself in blackouts and woken up in different places that, you know, and they take me back to my car, blah, blah, blah. So that's the way my addiction was, you know? And I remember one day I was working at the salon, and four police officers came into the salon. That morning, when I got up, I got dressed, I'm going to my job. And when I walked out, my car only had one wheel. And the, it was just the rims and the wheel, and it was just, and I literally almost passed. I'm like, I couldn't believe it. And I looked at myself, and I was like, I was in shock, right? So my roommate takes me to work. We work together. And that afternoon, four police officers came to the salon that I was working at the Galleria Mall. And when I saw them, oh, my God, I knew they were coming for me. I knew. I'm like, I must have killed somebody. I don't know, something. I had to have done something. So I instantly went to the bathroom. And I stayed there and stayed there. My client sat in her chair. They came. They're knocking. Yeah, Yolanda, Yolanda. And I'm like, what, what? And so I come out, and I'm kind of peeking. And the police are gone. And I'm like, okay, okay. They're not. They must not be looking for me. So I did the hair. And when the lady checked out, I asked the receptionist, what did those police officers want? And she goes, oh, they were looking for some thieves, something about some thieves around here. I was like, oh, thank God. And I thought they were coming to look for me. But that's the escalation of my disease. And one time I went to go see my parents, and I had taken cocaine with me. And I went into Mexico, and when we were coming back, there was dogs. Mm-hmm. Yep. So they confiscated my car, blah, 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 you know? So that was another incident. So that's the way my life continued with my disease. And the year before, when I was first introduced to this program, I had gotten out of work and I went to a bar. And I was coming home, and I was like a block away from my house. And I think I ran a red light. And I hit somebody. And then when I hit somebody, I went into the oncoming traffic. And it was raining, so they hit me again. And when I came to, I was in jail. And I think that for me, I always had that guy that always rescued me. So I called him, and sure enough, he puts down his house and he comes and he takes me out. But the next couple of days, I get a phone call from this gentleman, and it was the guy that I had hit here on Spring Road in 41. And he was apologizing because he actually was pushing me and doing all this stuff to me, and I never knew that. I never knew where I had gotten my bruises. But he was making amends to me for doing that, but yet it was me that caused the accident. So it cost me thousands of dollars to get out of that those problems. But they demanded that I come to AA. And when we went to my first meeting to AA, I remember doing a line of cocaine before we went in. And then I remember when we came out, we're like, those people are crazy. You know? And it still took me 1 year to realize how sick I was. And so what really brought me into these rooms was my boss kept telling me, you know, you're screwing up, you know, you're late all the time, your clients, wah, 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 you know? And it was like 1 year out the other. And my last year of working, I always had cocaine with me. It's either my bra, my shoe, you name it, I did it constantly. When I came into the program, I was 89 pounds. I'm not that today, but I was very little. And so I told him, yeah, I'm gonna do better, blah, blah, blah. He even like laid me off of work for 2 weeks, and I got mad. I'm like, screw him, you know, he needs me, blah, blah, blah. And then he lets me come back to work. And then one day, I went out one Friday night, and I'm supposed to be at work the next day. And I woke up in somebody's house, and when I woke up, I had moved the dresser against this door. And then I was like, where am I, you know? And so I started saying, you know, like, hello, hello. And this guy comes over, and they're helping me move the dresser. And I ask him, what time is it? And he's like, 10. And I was supposed to be at work at 9. So I'm like, where's my car? Where's my car? Blah, blah, blah. And when I get in my car, there's all these pictures of me. And back then, you know, I've been sober for 31 years, you know. So back then, when you went to clubs and stuff, people walked around, they asked if they could take a picture with you, and they would, you know, pay the person, you know, you'd get these Polaroid. And so there was all these pictures of me with, you know, like dancing, either way. And today I still have those pictures in a box. If I ever doubt this program, all I have to do is look at those pictures. And so I get in my car, I'm driving like a maniac to go change so I can go to work. And when I looked in the mirror, I had a complete black eye. And it was like I could hardly open it. And like I wasn't even aware of it, because I was still high on cocaine. I was still, and in this, I know I talk a lot about cocaine, but I did acid and all these other things, but my main thing was cocaine and alcohol. And so when I realized, I'm like, I can't fix this. I realized, you know, like I was in a profession that I sold fashion, like we made people look good, so I couldn't go to work. I knew in that moment, I'm like, I'm about to lose my job. So long story short, I called the salon, and I asked to talk to my boss, and he said, stay where you're at. So I'm gonna send somebody to get you. That's what he said. Which is very admirable that this man cared that much about me, you know, considering everything I did. And he had 7 hair salons at that time, and he had one in Buckhead at the time. And so I said, okay, why am I staying here? Why can't I go to work? And he goes, because, you know, you're a mess, and just stay where you're at. I go, well, what's going to happen? And he goes, well, I'm going to get somebody to come pick you up, and we're going to take you to my house, and we're going to find a place to put you in. That's all I heard. They're going to put me away somewhere. So as soon as I hung up, I had a T-shirt, I put on some glasses, and I went to Minx. I don't know if anybody knows where Minx is at. I don't even know if it's still there. And I got 3 packs of Long Island iced teas and the 4 packs. And I drank them. And when the girl came to get me, I had it in one of those. And I'm drinking it through the straw. And she's taking me, and I convinced her to take me to the salon in Buckhead. I am so drunk, I don't remember getting there. I've already blacked out again. So I go into the salon in Buckhead, and Fuji, the owner there, he sees me, and he's like, this is what I'm told, I don't remember. They put me in the back, and why I do this, I don't know why we used to do that. I move the whole thing again, and I close the door. And all the hair color that was back there, it was on the floor. Everything was on the floor, like it was a mess. So long story short, can you imagine all these clients on a Saturday? So he finally pushes the door, blah, blah, blah. They take me out over his shoulder like a child. And, you know, they take me away. So then that Sunday, where, you know, he's letting me just have my space, my manager's there, this girl, him, his wife, they're talking to me. I'm so bothered by it, you know? and, you know, you need help, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so that Monday, they called around to find out where I could go. So the first place and the first time that I had to do my steps and what was my resentment in institutions, it was Ridgeview. Because I came here and they wouldn't take me because I didn't have insurance, right? And I sure enough couldn't afford the price for here. But this was my first place. And I'm so grateful today that I get to be up here, you know, and talking about how the circle goes. And so I ended up going to First Step, blah, blah, blah. And while I was in there, they came and spoke to us from Metro Atlanta Recovery Residence. And I remember telling the guy, oh, no, I have to go to work. Like, yeah. And he goes, cut the bullshit. Nobody had ever really ever told me that. And I was like, cut the bullshit. Who says that? You know? And he's like, you're lying. You're going to die. And I was like, Long story short, I did end up in Mar. And going to Mar changed my life. And I really believe for me, I needed to be institutionalized. I really did. Because conniving, very conniving. Like, how can I outsmart them? How can I do it differently, you know? And so I go there, and I was probably there for 6 months. And this girl that, you know, she'd been with us in the halfway house. We woke up and she was gone. And the next day she died. And that kind of jolted me. I was like, wow, she's dead? Like, it just seemed weird to me, you know, that we were sober together, we were going to meetings every day. They make us get up at 6 a.m. We were at our spiritual group at 7. And what they did there is they kept our time very busy. So by the time 10 o'clock came, let me tell you, I was exhausted mentally. And we would just pass out, right? And so I saw her die in the program. And so while I was there, I mean, everything was going great. Like, we had a sponsor. We had somebody, I'm sure, where they would come in and talk to us weekly. And slowly, you know, I began to get out of my fog, right? But it took a while to get out of my fog. And because I always worked, I still owned a car, you know, and all the girls there, they didn't own a car. So my way of escaping women in this group, I would leave. I'm like, I'm out. So I would leave, go to the mall, whatever, and back then we didn't have cell, we didn't have none of that. So they eventually took my car away, and I was forced to deal with all my issues. And I'm grateful today because I had a lot of issues. I brought the 12 steps because I believe the 12 steps saved my life too. And the big book. And one thing I can tell you about this program is that I have never, ever stopped coming. I've always come back, even when I didn't want to come back. Even when my life was amazing, it was already going great, everything's been wonderful, I've still come back. At the beginning, I came a lot more. Today, now I'm probably just 2 meetings a week. But I still come back, and I help women that ask me for sponsorship. I also never say no. I promise you, I didn't want to be up here. But I know I have to be up here. Because I don't know how this works, but it just keeps working when you keep giving it back, right? And I've always had a sponsor. Throughout my years, I've had different sponsors. I had this one sponsor, I used to call her the Nazi sponsor. And she used to tell me, because I used to be late for everything, and she really helped me stop doing that. She said, from now on, if you're not here on time, you better have died on your way here, or you don't have a sponsor. And I liked her so much. She was helping me so much. I could tell, like, I wasn't angry all the time. Like, I wasn't coming in late. I wasn't sitting in the back. And if you called on me, I wouldn't be like, I'll pass. You know, that was my life, you know, like, just bitter and angry, you know? And so I got dedicated to the big book. I got dedicated to 12 steps. I got dedicated to working with others. And like Mary Jean said, you know, like I never could have thought that I'd have a woman friend for that long. You know, that's just not how I rolled in my day, you know? In my day, I just did whatever I wanted, right? And so today I have relationships that, today I have children. I can't even believe I have children. When we go to Texas, you know, because my family, they do drugs, they drink. And I need to tell you about my brother, that he did die of the disease. He died. So he died at the same age that he died. His son, 6 months ago, is brain dead from drugs. So I do need to say that, because that is very important, I feel, that I see it. I see it constantly, you know, whenever I go home, right? Today, I'm around this all the time. I'm around sobriety, and I actually love sobriety because I feel the people are real, the ones that I'm around with, you know? And even the ones that ask for help, like when I asked for help when I first came in, even the ones that ask for help, they keep me sober. Because it reminds me of what it's like. And I wanted to share something about the 12 steps. And when I came in the program, I didn't need glasses either. Okay, so one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. I know y'all hear that a lot. And if you continue to stay in these rooms, you will always hear it, and it really is a blessing for me today to hear it. And what it means that, is that I can't anymore. I can't. I can't drink. I can't do drugs. I do my best to not create chaos so it doesn't bring me closer to a drink. But all that has been taught to me. It's not like I came in here. Because I promise you, when I came in here, if I found a loophole, I was going to try to take it. I tried not to keep coming back here. I didn't want to be stuck here. But today I want to be stuck here. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. What does that mean to me? It means that God can. God can if I seek him out. And I seek him out all the time. Now, if people see me, they probably think I'm crazy because I'm always talking to him. It's just become ingrained in me to talk to him. My daughters, I had him late in life, and they've never seen me drunk. I've never hit them. I've never spanked them. I've always communicated with them. When they would fight, I would separate them and I would get them to talk to each other. And you see, I didn't grow up like that. So I have all the opportunities. If I were to tell you, oh, my mom did this to D, my dad, blah, 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 and they did. But you know what? It doesn't make me an alcoholic. I learned that in this program. I think I was 8 years sober when I made amends to my mom. I didn't want to make amends to her. I'm like, you did all this to us? I don't want to make amends. But once I made amends to her, I freed myself. And when I made amends to her, I could see who she, I saw her, and I could see her through the rim of what God wanted me to see her, a child. right? And by seeing that, I have an amazing relationship with her today. Is she still mean? Is she still cruel? Yes, she is. But you know what? I have my boundaries today. I can leave if I want to. Before, I didn't know none of those things. None of this stuff that I talk about, I knew none of that. When I came in here, that's why I was angry. I was bitter because I didn't know how to use my voice. And as y'all kind of hear me, I tremble a little bit. It's because it is nerve-wracking for me. But I want to carry the message. The message is so important. And three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. What does that mean to me? It means let God. Yeah. And whatever God that may be for you, you know, I'm not saying that it has to be a religion. Whatever it might be for you, find it. You know, because when I first came in here, I was a Catholic. I was forced to go to Catholic school. I mean, and forced to go to church in the morning. And what I remember of that was always being pinched. And sit down straight. Blah, blah, blah. You know, it was always that, you know. And I don't have to do that anymore. And when I came in here, I remember they kept saying, seek the God of your understanding. And I went, and I think Mary Jean and I too, I don't know, like I went to many places trying to understand this God of that people talked about. What does that mean? What is this God thing? You know, I mean, is it the Bible? Is it the church? What is this? And so I'll never forget, we went to Cherokee, and they were having like a powwow, like, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna go there, you know, maybe I'll get more spiritual, you know? And they're doing the drummings and doing all this stuff at 5 or 6 in the morning. And in that moment, I think I was 8 years sober, I thought to myself, I don't need to do this anymore. I realized in that moment that that was their understanding and I have mine. And from that, it's given me so, so much freedom by knowing that I have the God of my understanding, and living life on life's terms hasn't always been easy. Like my brother died, my husband had cancer, stage 4, they didn't know if he was gonna make it, he had rectal cancer. Then a year later, he has cancer again, but he makes it, right? And what do we do? We just turn it over, turn it over, turn it over. And there's been times that I just can't make a decision because I just don't know. But I cannot explain to you that in the promise it says we intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. I cannot believe my life today. I just can't. Like, from where I come from to where I'm at today, and the friendships I have, and the honesty, and the care, and the love. I went to a meeting yesterday, and because I was starting to get nervous about this, so I go to a meeting, and anyhow, we shared, it was a step 8, blah, blah, blah. And afterwards, it was just the support. And is that, I don't know if y'all need that, but I need that. I know that I need that today. And so I used to seek all those things in all the wrong places. Step 4, made assertion and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. What does that mean? It means I have to look within. And when I looked within, I can see this, I can experience more of the sunlight of the Spirit. And I mean that, like I've experienced it. And when I first came into this program, the spiritual understanding that I came in with and where it's at today is very different. So it doesn't matter how you find it, even if it's just a little bit, and it keeps you sober for today, that's like amazing, amazing. And 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being. I never admitted shit to nobody. I'm like, oh no, I'm not telling, right? But another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. So, means I admit my wrongs today. And that gives me a lot of freedom. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. What does that mean for me? It means prepare for the change. But when you prepare for that change, listen, when I came in here, I needed to change. If I didn't change, I was gonna go back. I'm very grateful today, by the grace of God, that I've only picked up one ship in this program. I'm very grateful. That night, that when I was demanded to go to AA, I never picked up a ship. I wasn't ready. I made fun of y'all. I made fun of myself, but anyhow. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. What does that mean to me? It means seek God's help. And I do that on a daily basis. And the most insignificant things sometimes. But it, for me, it helps me. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and become willing to make amends to them all. All it's asking is that I become willing. Took me 8 years with my mom, but I became willing. And today I have an amazing relationship with her. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Make amends. Just make them. Be perfect. Just make them. I promise you'll feel free. 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. That's my daily inventory. Daily. And I do that. For me, I love to write anyhow. So for me, that comes very easy, right? For me to just write. And it's amazing what happens. Sometimes, and I don't know, I mean, you might want to try it after hearing this. You'd be amazed sometimes if you write, you'll just start writing. And you'll feel so much better afterwards. At least that's been my experience. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. What does that mean for me today? It means I pray and I meditate. It doesn't mean I'm a religious person, because I can sit here and tell you, stand here and tell you that I was forced to be a religious person as a child, forced to be a religious person. Today, I'm not a religious person. I really believe in God, and I believe that if I seek him and I pray and I try to do what is asked of me in this program, and I continue to do what my sponsor tells me to do, and in doing all that, I will change, because it's forcing me to change, because I'm looking at myself and I'm looking at what's not working for me. And what's not working for me is these character defects that they talk about in this book. I know I have them, and I know one of them for me that was very dangerous and caused me many problems was my anger. And with my anger, it could be silent anger. I'd shut you out and you were gone out of my life. But I existed in loneliness by doing that. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you. That's what I'm doing tonight. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Yolanda. That was beautiful.
Thank you very much.